It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For decades, it was a routine for many Americans to wind down their day with late-night television on one of the big three networks. People like Johnny Carson, David Letterman were the last voices many of us heard at night and would provide something to talk about with friends and coworkers the next day.
Top 10 insults for me, your host, your friend, your TV buddy, Dave Letterman.
Do yourself a favor, Letterman. Make an appointment with a brain surgeon.
Yes, cute. And then I'll give him a cookie. Number 9.
Who picks your clothes? Stevie Wonder?
Okay. Number...
I just want to say to the kids out there watching, you can do anything you want in life. Yeah. Yeah, unless Jay Leno wants to do it too.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And... Yeah, I share your feelings.
Yeah, I don't know who comes out worse there, the executives at CBS Paramount or Jay Leno. Nevertheless, as iconic as those shows were, the importance of late-night television has been drifting away over time, and it recently hit a rock. As we just heard, CBS says it will cancel Stephen Colbert's The Late Show effective May of next year. Now, the network says this is a financial decision. The show's expensive to make. Declining ratings means it's not as attractive to advertisers. But it also comes at a time when CBS's parent company, Paramount, was seeking federal approval for a merger. Colbert is a loud and frequent critic of the president. You might say people are saying CBS is sacking Colbert in an attempt to appease President Trump. We asked our texting group about late night in general and the Colbert cancellation in particular. Gene in Cobden said, "The late night comics deliver excellent news. I often prefer their zingers about politics to the anodyne and shallow news on TV." And Lloyd in Danville said, "Late night puts issues in perspective. Truth in late night comedy matters." So what is the future of late-night television? Do you still watch these programs? Have they become too political? And do you think today's shows are as good as those of the past? You can join us on air today at 800-222-9455. Our number again, 800-222-9455. For the rest of the program today, we're going to put this into historical context with Ben Alba. He's the director of academic success and professor of legal practice at DePaul University. But more to the point for our conversation, he's written a book called Inventing Late Night, Steve Allen and the Original Tonight Show. Ben, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Nice to be here, Brian. Good to be with you again.
So what got you interested in late night television?
It was really an accident because growing up, my big musical hero, believe it or not, was Andy Williams, the great American singer. We hear him still every December with his Christmas anthem, "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year." But he was so much more than that, particularly in the 60s. He had his own television show that won 3 Emmy Awards. His signature song was Moon River, among many, many other hits. He had 17 gold and platinum albums. And I became friends with him in the early 90s. And one thing I knew about his early career was that he was a regular singer on the Steve Allen Tonight Show at the time in the early mid-1950s when the Tonight Show had a team of four regular singers that would sing two or three times a week. So I wanted to find out by writing Steve through the Chicago Museum of Broadcast Communications to share some of his insights into what Andy was like at the time during a very early period in his career. And to my surprise, Steve granted me an interview and I was able to meet with him at his office in Van Nuys, California. And not only did I learn a lot about what Andy was like during that time of his life, but I was really stricken by the fact that Steve was very proud of these early shows that he did. He actually invented the genre of late night television. And as a result, at the same time, he was very saddened by the fact that hardly any video evidence of these early programs existed, even though these were glorious times for him as they pioneered this new TV genre. So
yeah, maybe tell us a little bit about what these programs were like, since, as you said, there's not a lot of video evidence.
Well, if you think about Steve Allen's early career in radio, what he ended up doing was a lot of things that came naturally to him. So they included doing a monologue at the beginning of the show, often topical, sitting at a desk that was on stage, interviewing celebrities, going out into the audience and interviewing those people. Sometimes taking the microphone and going out into the street and interviewing people as well. And they would also have comedy sketches. So these were elements that ended up following him into television. And he did a late night local show in New York called the Steve Allen Knickerbocker Beer Show. This is when sponsors had their names in the titles of the shows. And it was at that time in 1953, 1954, that the president of NBC, Pat Weaver, the father of Sigourney Weaver, saw Steve's show, and he was looking for a way to possibly have the network do a late night show. And there was one show that the network had started the previous year called Broadway Open House, which was more of a throwback to vaudeville, and it only lasted about a year and a half. And Pat Weaver was kind of shopping around to see what other concepts might work. And when he saw Steve's show and he saw how kind of loose, conversational, it was kind of like a cocktail party, he decided that maybe this might be the kind of show that we need to bookend our network programming, because they already had a show early in the morning called Today. They had a midday show that no longer exists. And then he was looking for a show that they could call Tonight. And so when he saw Steve's show in 1954, he suggested to Steve, why don't we go ahead and adopt your show? We can rebrand it as Tonight. And on September 27, 1954, that was when the Tonight Show nationwide was born.
I don't know what it says about me that I'm just now making the connection, maybe for the first time in my life, that NBC bookends the Today Show and the Tonight Show. Of course, it makes so much sense. So what is it about this formula? And I should say we need to take a break in a couple of minutes, but this idea of, you know, the things that have persisted, a monologue, musical numbers, those kinds of things, having a band in-house in some cases.
Yeah, that's right. That's actually one thing that I had skipped. And these were things that essentially came naturally to Steve. He was spontaneous. He was very smart. He was well-read. And the other thing, and his writers would tell me, is that he didn't need a script. You know, you can't have people writing for five nights a week, 90 minutes a night. You needed a host who was able to kind of carry the show, use a blueprint. Steve goes out into the audience. He knew what to do with folks in the audience there to have lighthearted conversations with them. And he discovered, and this is something he discovered in radio, that the nice little exchange, humorous exchange with a member of the audience could generate a much bigger response and a bigger laugh than the best scripted jokes with Jack Benny or Bob Hope. So that was one of the elements of late night that was born from Steve Allen's experience in radio and early television.
Yeah. All right. So this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let me remind listeners, we are talking about maybe the end of late night television, or certainly the beginning of the end of it, with the cancellation of the Colbert Show and uncertainty hanging over some of the other shows that are out there now. My guest today is Ben Elba, who is a professor at DePaul University, a law professor, but also wrote a book called Inventing Late Night, Steve Allen and the Original Tonight Show. We asked our listeners what you think about this. Randy in Glassford said the sincerity and quality of information at Colbert is so good, there is no single source that will replace it. Christina in Hoopston said this is totally to appease Trump. In my opinion, Stephen Colbert was calling him out on so many of his faults, and he's too insecure to have that on TV. What do you think about this? Are you still consuming late night television? When are you consuming it? A lot of people watch these things on YouTube the next day. Let us know what you think. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More to come here on The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the state of late night television after CBS recently announced it was canceling Stephen Colbert's The Late Show. The network and parent company say it's purely a financial decision, but critics say the network is trying to appease President Trump. We asked members of our texting group about this. S from Mattoon said, in part, I have already canceled my Paramount subscription, and the last episode of Colbert will be the last time I watch CBS. Colbert is the only program on CBS I watch. I DVR every new episode because, like the rest of the world, I have to work for a living, so it's usually my dinner time viewing the next day. We're putting this into context with Ben Elba, law professor at DePaul University, who also wrote the book Inventing Late Night, Steve Allen and the Original Tonight Show. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. On that note, Ben, that idea of not watching this in real time, we also got a text from Lex in Champaign who said, I watch Colbert the morning after it airs. I auto-record all the shows. It's a habit for decades. I used to watch late-night TV live, mostly for the opening monologues by Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, David Letterman. I do not want to see or hear political jokes and observations before going to sleep. It's too upsetting, but love it with morning coffee. So, Ben, that does get to the fact that the way people consume late-night TV isn't always or even mainly anymore during late-night. Talk about that.
The big revenue generators for the networks were for viewers to be watching their programs in real time. And so when this changed, and I think that some of the really big factors affecting the decline in late-night viewership were the advent of cable and the proliferation of thousands of cable stations. Then you have the internet that allows you to watch clips anytime, any of the day or night. And then also 21st century culture. We're almost more of a 24/7 culture. So we're not really looking at watching programs at night together as a shared experience and then talking about it the next day at the water cooler. So I think when you combine all of those situations and those factors, it certainly has contributed to the decline and the lack of financial appeal that these shows have to getting advertising dollars. So I think that definitely has factored into it.
I wonder if you think that, you know, say podcasts now satiate some of this desire to see celebrities in, you know, supposedly unfiltered situations. I mean, you know, back in the day, it strikes me, and maybe this is just the selection of YouTube clips you can find, you know, you could have spontaneous moments with the hosts. Those seem a little harder to come by now. And then you have, you know, maybe that's the reason that Jimmy Fallon introduced, you know, board games and crazy antics like that. So you could, you know, sort of force the celebrities into doing something. I don't know. How do you see the itch that consumers have for this kind of content being scratched these days?
Well, one thing that we had back in the 50s that doesn't exist any longer is the Tonight Show was live. I mean, it was actually airing from 11:30 p.m. to 1 o'clock in the morning. So Steve Allen had to carry that show. One thing that they also didn't have back then was the overnight ratings. So there wasn't that much of a clamor for the program to generate lots of hits and immediate viewership at every minute of the show. And you can track that now. When do viewers turn the television off? So they need today to be able to generate much more activity throughout the entire program. Whereas with Steve Allen, he did have the spontaneous nature, but not every minute of that show was going to be funny. And sometimes he'd go into the audience, have some genial exchanges with people there, but not everything would be a big laugh. And oftentimes things would bomb. I mean, his writers were telling me, his producers were telling me that. But as long as you had that one big laugh the next day people would talk about how funny the show was. So it was a different expectation back then. The show was considered a success because there were about roughly at a high point, about 3 million viewers a night watching, which is more right now than Stephen Colbert commands. But again, the market at that time was not fragmented the way it is now. So I'm not sure if that really gets to your point, but certainly that factors into it.
It does. Talk about the role of the sort of politics in these shows. As we just heard that listener say that, you know, they don't want to hear political content before going to sleep. They're happy to consume it the next morning. But have these shows always been political? Has that changed over time?
I would say that probably today there is more of a domination of the shows by political content. But I think I can speak more precisely to what happened earlier. And so with the Steve Allen Tonight Show, he did touch upon political issues. It wasn't a comedy show every night, but it wasn't a political show every night. He did take political stands on things, and he not so much that he would say something or he would campaign, but rather there were just certain things that he did, such as he would book performers who had been blacklisted and suspected to be communists. He booked Lena Horne, who was blacklisted at the time. Zero Mostel, Jack Gilford. The network said no, but Steve says, no, I want them on. When NBC decided to pick up Steve's local late night show in New York and they wanted to rebrand it as Tonight, they requested him to replace two of the house singers who performed nightly. And those two singers were Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet. They were white, but yet the network said they were too, quote unquote, ethnic, implying that they were Jewish. And Steve said to them, okay, I'll replace Steve and Edie, but only if you get me Frank Sinatra and Peggy Lee for the same price. Now get out of my office. And that's and the network just allowed him to go ahead and do that. And Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet had a fabulous career over the next several decades. Steve even very much supported performers of color when it was not fashionable to do so. I interviewed Diane Carroll, Eartha Kitt, Bobby Short. They were all praising him for the dignity with which he treated them. He didn't launch a big campaign. He just did it. You know, he treated them as artists. He treated them with dignity, and he respected them for that. So I think the fact that he was well-read and he had such a broad frame of reference, I mean, he could lead panel discussions on a variety of topics, controversial topics, McCarthyism, drug abuse, nuclear war, the death penalty, the mob. And then in the next episode, he'd jump into a vat of Jell-O. I mean, you know, nobody had seen that kind of a performer before, but that was the unique, the original Steve Allen inventing what I consider to be an original American art form.
So you mentioned he was getting 3 million viewers, and that was a couple of generations ago. Colbert, right, for reference, gets 1 million. What do you think of CBS's announcement that The Late Show is being canceled?
I think that certainly the financial aspects would factor into it. I don't venture because I'm not this goes beyond my expertise, but certainly it looks like they may be trying to appease the administration now, and the lawsuit, for example, that they had Canada Trump had sued CBS for the way it presented Kamala Harris's position on the Middle East. They based that lawsuit on a state consumer protection law and asked for $10 billion and then later $20 billion. And then CBS sought a dismissal of what many legal scholars had deemed a frivolous claim, but then ended up settling for $16 million. So there has certainly been a lot of talk about that. And it's certainly concerning. Take note of the various comments that your viewers have made on that.
Yeah, I would also add the context in of the candidate Trump suing ABC News over its characterization of his adjudication of sexual assault in a civil trial with E. Jean Carroll in New York, and defunding public media, I think, is part of the broader context of the administration and the media here.
If I could add one thing,
please.
Certainly these shows are nowadays are fairly expensive to produce if you're going to have a full band or orchestra. You know, imagine with the Carson years, I think you had about at least a 25 or 30 piece orchestra there. And then you have, you know, a lot of all the production costs that go into it. So oftentimes, I think that the networks like the prestige factor and are willing to make some of these late night shows loss leaders as long as it can generate that kind of prestige for the network. But if the costs are really driving, have been driven up as much as they have been, it may well be that the programs are going to have to scale back if they want to continue. Maybe it's a smaller band, maybe it's pre-recorded music, for example, in terms of one aspect of the production of those kinds of shows.
Do you see, are there other times in history when the federal government has sort of put pressure on television programs like this, or even entire television networks?
I don't recall that in late night, but certainly there was a kerfuffle with the Nixon administration in the late 1960s with regard to the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, which was a primetime show, which started in a very kind of anodyne type of humor, but then progressed as the 60s progressed toward taking stances against the Vietnam War, the Johnson administration, and also the Nixon administration. And there were concerns by the network, independent of of whatever pressure they may have been getting, but the Smothers Brothers program was canceled, and I know that they've had a lot to say about the reasons for it, and I'm sure that a lot of viewers or a lot of listeners here would recall that happening back in 1969.
So I know we're not soothsayers. We don't have crystal balls or entrails spread out in front of us. But what do you see as the future for late night television? As somebody who's steeped in its past, does it reinvent itself cheaper? Does it go away altogether? Are we just going to have YouTube interviews and podcasts and that sort of thing?
I think that one thing that late night has generally been able to focus around is a likable host. And you have Steve Allen, Carson, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Jay Leno. And I think that certainly people who are considered likable can generate their own following, but it might not necessarily be in late night. So I think that there's room for those kinds of hosts. Whether they continue in late night is another thing. With regard to budget, if late night is going to continue, it may well be that it will be scaled back. And whether due to censorship or other forces, those kinds of shows start dialing back on the political humor. I mean, I don't know if that may end up being the alternative to the kind of late night shows that we're seeing tonight, but or today. But I think so much is changing on the political scene that we're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
Last question. Do you think Americans lose anything if the late night show format does go away?
I think that some of that may already have been lost with the fragmentation of the viewership. We don't have the kind of shared experiences that we can talk about and the kinds of experiences that bring us together as a country. Now, with audiences being so siloed and in different tents, it's a lot harder to bring them together now, and that may well kind of forebode a darker future for the country. But again, we'll have to see how this turns out, and hopefully there will be some solutions that will maybe turn things around.
Ben Elba is the author of Inventing Late Night, Steve Allen in the Original Tonight Show. He's also a professor of legal practice at DePaul University Law School and also director of academic success there. Ben Elba, thanks so much for sharing the context with us today on the 21st Show.
Much appreciated, Brian.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we return to the golden age of air travel with Kathy Davis. The Bloomington-based writer was a stewardess from the time when men wore suits to fly through deregulation to the post-9/11 security regime. And did I also mention she was afraid of flying? Davis has written a memoir about her life and work called The Closest Exit May Be Behind You, Memoirs of a Fearful Flight Attendant. That's coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Layla Nazarova is an associate producer, and our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. We appreciate hearing from you about our programs and your suggestions for future guests or stories. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. You can find that and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. We've got our past programs there and links to our podcasts, or just look us up on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.